Welcome to Nell and Matt's Obsolete Movies, the podcast where we revisit movies from our 20-plus years of collecting films on what are now obsolete formats. That's the other thing. When we started collecting these movies, they were not on obsolete formats.
Exactly.
Also known as films from the VHS era, though the films we review on this podcast are not necessarily on VHS. However, our film for this episode is She-Creature from 2001. It's a rare 21st century film, and we have it on VHS, getting it from Pleasant Dreams Records and Movies in Polish Hills, Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Yeah, this movie, this made for Cinemax creature feature from the early 2000s. Yeah,
so Cinemax for Halloween in 2001 had a series of pictures that were an homage to American International Pictures. Sometimes they were like a direct remake, but it American International Pictures, AIP, was known for B-movie films. They're probably their most famous contributor or collaborator is Roger Corman.
Yes.
And he did the Poe series with them, so House of Usher, Pit and the Pendulum, Raven are probably the ones that most people would know or associate with them. But I do have to share their formula for making films.
Yes.
So I love this formula, which is the acronym of an entertainment lawyer who was one of the owners of the company. And so it's action, revolution, so novel or controversial themes and ideas, killing, oratory, so notable dialogue and speeches, fantasy, and fornication, so sex appeal for young adults, was what they tried to have and include in their films. So Cinemax made a series of these films in homage to the company.
Yes.
And so Sea Creature was one of them.
Yes. And it certainly follows that formula, and there is a distinct Roger Corman vibe to this film, with its scant 80-some-minute runtime, 89-minute runtime. Basically, it's there in Ireland, it's sometime in the seemingly late 19th century. It's one of those, there's a very strong sense of past-ness in this.
Yes.
I mean, in that way that, like, I have students who kind of think everything before the 1950s is kind of in the 19th century. So, like, Chaucer, Plato, Shakespeare all lived in the 19th century because there was really nothing beyond that. And there's a strong past. So it's in the past-ness.
Well, if you remember, it said 1905 when it
started. It did say 1905. See, I missed that because all of the cues had, there were no other cues other than having to say it was, and I apparently missed that intertitle.
It said 1905 somewhere in Ireland.
Somewhere in Ireland, this troupe of freak show people, but it's a fake freak show. The freaks aren't real. Going from town to town duping people. And one of the things, they have a mermaid, they have a zombie. The zombie character is more than a little bit racist. Even when he's not playing the zombie anymore, it's still this kind of, but period correct-ish stereotype. This old man who was an actor who was, you would recognize from The Wicker Man and A Clockwork Orange, says, "Oh, mermaid. Oh, that's not a real mermaid." And then they go to his house and find that he has a real mermaid. And he's old and crazy. And of course, the dishonest freak show freaks want that mermaid. And they go get the mermaid. And then they're like, "Let's go to America on this mermaid. Because if we spend the rest of the movie on a boat, we don't have to do any location shooting. We can just do this on the cheap, on a soundstage, on a fake boat, and we are good."
And it was 18 days of filming.
And it is 18 days of filming, so that's fast, that's cheap. And it also, though, I mean, in ways that the film makes, tries to make virtue out of necessity, Ultimately, when things go sideways, they're in the middle of the ocean. So it is a captive movie, and there's no radioing for help. There's no swimming to the shore. There's no choice, but you got to deal with the killer mermaid.
Yeah.
The sexy killer mermaid.
This is true.
It is Cinemax. There's mermaid boobs throughout the film because...
It is, yes.
It's Skinemax.
Well, definitely, especially at that time, that was literally what it was known for. It's like softcore porn type of films that it would show all the time.
Yes.
We were poor college graduates around that time, so we couldn't afford Cinemax.
Yeah, I don't think I ever lived at the house with Cinemax.
I don't think I did either.
Maybe we briefly as part of a temporary cable package upgrade, but...
Yeah.
Yeah, whatever. Premium cable, made-for-TV movie.
Now, with that being said, there was things I did like about it.
Yes.
Yeah. So...
In a way that Roger Corman-esque movies, because there is a real Roger Corman vibe on this, can be strangely satisfying.
Yes. And this is a strangely satisfying film. And I will say that the actors did a nice job with what they had. And so the cast is like all these like people with like just solid backgrounds in acting and have done a variety of things. Rufus Sewell, who plays Angus, he is the owner of the carnival show. He's done a variety of films. If you see him, you would know. He kind of has this... He has, like, a very distinct look. So if you saw him, you'd be like, oh, that guy. His most recent role was in Old. Carla... Oh, how do you say her last name? G-U-G-I-N-O. She actually was dressed in The Haunting of Hill House and Gerald's Game. She did such an amazing job in acting in those roles. She plays Lily, who... is the fake mermaid at the beginning of the movie. She's playing a mermaid in the sideshow. She's a good, solid actress. And the funny one for me was Gil Bellows, who plays Miles, the first victim. He actually was on Ally McBeal at the time, so had like this really solid career at that time. It was like, let me do this mermaid movie.
Let's do She Creature, why not?
But it turns out his wife was the mermaid. She was the killer mermaid. Yeah, so that's his wife. But yeah, as Matt said, so it's these carnival owners.
Carnies in the carniest sense of the word.
So they have you see that they have a zombie, you see that Lily is playing a mermaid. Not a very, obviously a very successful carnival, and they're trying to take it to the big leagues to be like Barnum and Bailey. Like they want to take it to the next level. And so they're hoping with this mermaid this will happen. Now, because it's captive, right, we have some people going crazy in the film.
Yes, you have people going crazy. You have this semi-seduction Lily and the Mermaid.
Mm-hmm.
And you also then just have, when things go sideways, what are we going to do? We got to hunt the monster or whatever. Yeah. Without giving too much away, though, this might be one that, like, if you can't watch it on this VHS tape that you buy at John and Dusty's store,
yes,
maybe you can't watch it.
Well, it's hard to Google, right? Like, nothing really comes up when you Google it. You had to put in, like, the year or
and it was originally, it was meant to be a part of a series, and the ending of the movie, which we don't want to give away, though you'll never see this film. is like sets up like, oh, I'm gonna see the mermaid again, you know, or something. It also has, I will say, it also has it fits the Joel Siegel rip on made for TV movies. Everybody's hair is always perfect and the lighting is always a little too good. Look as well.
Yeah.
But it is, I concur though, it is strangely satisfying cinematic junk food.
Yeah.
Because like those American International films and like that Roger Corman vibe that they were going for, hey, it tells a complete story. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's conflict, there's resolution. There's rising action. Yes. Actually, there's the other thing. I mean, in terms of like basic... Like, this was, you know, last semester I was teaching fiction writing. If you just want to do the basic plot that's super satisfying that people like,
yeah,
create a problem, make the problem get gradually worse, and then solve the problem.
Right. And, you know, the director and writer of this film, has the one that people would know about is Snakes on the Plane. He was the writer for Snakes on the Plane.
Which is also strangely satisfying.
Which is also strangely satisfying.
But know? Not the writer that we met.
Not Snakes the writer.
Not the original writer of Snakes
on
the Plane.
Who was not very happy with how Snakes on the Plane turned out.
I guess we should now tell that story.
Yeah.
Also, I'm out of things to say about Sea Creature, and we're only 10 minutes into this podcast, but the original script writer, the person who wrote the first version of Snakes on a Plane, was a professor at Pitt. And back when the Oaks Theater was only a movie theater here in Pittsburgh, they had a special Snakes on the Plane with the dude who wrote Snakes on the Plane. And they revised his script heavily. I think it was something like 24 rewrites over 13 years or something to get to Snakes on a Plane, which is amazing. And was kind of, and actually they rewrote the script enough that they almost were able to take his name off of the film, which also would have meant the compensation he would have gotten for his original story would have been a lot less, I'm sure.
Yeah.
So he was profoundly bitter to the point where in the Q&A, which he refused to stop, and he said one more question like 8 times, somebody finally said, "Is there anything you're happy about with this movie?"
Yeah.
And he still didn't get the hint, and he just kept going. But so one of the people who really rewrote Snakes on a Plane to make it a strangely satisfying cinematic junk food also wrote She Creature, which is strangely satisfying cinematic junk food.
Well, I read the original Sea Creature, which was an NAIP film from the 50s. So the original Sea Creature, a doctor hypnotizes a woman and hypnotizes her all the way back to her primordial form where she was a sea creature, and then uses her when she's in the sea creature form to murder people. I like this one. This one sounds much better to me. The one that we watched seemed much better to me.
Yes, where it's a real mermaid.
It's a real mermaid. And for me, this also, you know, The Little Mermaid would have been, I think, 89 or 90 is when The Little Mermaid came out, the Disney version of Little Mermaid. And so it's a very friendly take on The Little Mermaid. It literally, like, gets rid of the original ending of Little Mermaid, which is where she dies. And the prince doesn't...
It's Disney-fied,
The prince doesn't marry her. She actually jumps to her death. I forgot... I was rereading the myth because it's like, oh, you know, is there any connection between the myth and the movie? I forgot her sisters sold their hair to the sea witch to give her a magical dagger. And if she killed the prince and his blood dripped on her, she would return to a mermaid. But she decides not to kill the prince and commits suicide and turns into sea foam. So Disney did not give us that version of The Little Mermaid, which is the version I knew of The Little Mermaid. And so it's kind of fun because this is definitely not Ariel in any way, shape, or form.
Yeah, I mean, she is definitely not human. I mean, in this way also, the monster is truly monstrous.
Yeah.
But human.
Right.
But has human characteristics. And invokes Lily, has empathy for the mermaid. But the mermaid is truly monstrous and truly wants to, you know, devour humanity.
Right.
And, yeah.
And so this film is going back to the old school version of what mermaids were. And at one point in time, they got conflated with sirens.
Yes.
Because sirens didn't initially look like mermaids.
Yes.
But it takes you back to the mermaids are trying to lure you to your certain death, and so this mermaid is definitely...
And they're sexy, and they make screaming sounds, and... But really not human. There's also this fascinating way the film does riff on Dracula.
Yeah.
You know, with, like, you just stayed on the boat in Dracula, and then suddenly it goes alien.
Well, we forgot to mention that part of it, is that
I think we should mention... The latter part of the film has a distinct alien vibe, where we kind of meet... There's the mermaid that's, you know, human with a tail, and then on the full moon, the mermaid becomes human with legs. And then when they get to the lair of the mermaids, the secret island that, you know, no one gets to go to and survive, we find the mermaid or the sea creature's final form, which has a Giger light vibe, much like how Giger designed the alien from Aliens. It's a Giger light vibe going on. I mean, there's some okay practical effects in this film, but very much the Lily, not Sigourney Weaver, but there is a "it's on the boat, kill it, we're the only ones alive" vibe. Which is also John Carpenter's The Thing.
Well, so Matt is not a cinephile in this sense of the word. So Stan Winston does the creatures for this film, for Siege Creature.
Yeah.
So he's known for The Thing, The Terminator, Invaders from Mars, Aliens, Predator, Pumpkinhead,
yes.
Predator 2, Terminator 2, Jurassic Park.
And so the sea creature has that vibe, that look, on a budget.
Yeah.
On a budget. But he's like, it's the best I can do. It's the bottom tier monster I can do.
Well, I'm sure
it does have that alien vibe. I mean, there's even one shot where they're looking down the corridor of the boat, and much like in the movie, like one of the iconic shots of the Giger monsters in Aliens, you know, something goes past the gate, and you're like, oh, that's monstrous. there's the monster. It's coming for us, you know, or it doesn't see us, or whatever, you know, the vibe you want.
Well, I will say, like, I did like the mermaid body itself before it went all...
Before it went all alien.
All alien. I actually thought, like, the body of the alien itself was pretty interesting. Like, the body of the alien. The body of the mermaid itself, I think, was really... well done. And so, like, anything that you saw around the tail looked pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think you could tell that it was definitely a creature on a budget, and they didn't show you the full creature. So, you know, who knows if they actually did the full body makeup.
Yeah, they might not. For a lot of those scenes, probably not.
Yeah, all you would see.
It was just the head.
It was just the head, which, it was an imposing head. It was definitely
a very imposing head.
But yeah, you could tell it was on a budget, and they probably didn't do the whole thing to make the budget of it. It's also kind of, if you watch Masters of Horror, you know, it does have that feel too of like how much can we pack into a short period of time on a low budget and tell this particular story.
Yeah. It's a fun popcorn movie.
It's a fun popcorn movie, yeah.
Have anything else to say about this movie? This is like we're at 18 minutes. We talked for 40 minutes on Peeping Tom, and we kind of felt like, oh, we gotta cut it short sometimes. it's satisfying. It's not deep. It is a great, I need something to turn off my brain movie.
Yeah.
So which then, let's just get to the four big questions. Camp retro classic or just an old movie?
I think it's just like an old movie. You know, there might be some camp elements to it, but I do feel like it's just an old movie.
That's the thing. Actually, I don't know if it can be enjoyed as camp. It's almost too good. I guess if you want a campy movie, don't pick this. And that if there is a dig to make on the movie, if you're looking for something to like make fun of or MST3K or what, or Riff Track or whatever, it's almost too good. It's not good, but it's too good to make fun of in that way.
That's true. And
it's a little too well executed. It's not full. You don't have like a Kurt Russell character and these like sort of iconic moments like The Thing that you really can be like, yeah, this movie.
Right.
There's none of that. It's okay. But and you can't really camp it up.
This is true. And there is, in the sense of like, it does have the pacing of an old horror film.
Yes.
And so that, I think, was also hard for people because it's not a situation where you get kills immediately.
There's a lot of exposition.
There's a lot of exposition.
There's a lot of slow burn build up before the kills happen. There are no real jump scares.
No. No. So I think if a traditional horror movie person isn't going to be happy with it because of the pacing... But it models the pacing of other horror films from like the 40s and 50s.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So, social political distance?
Well, so it's National Coming Out Day, and so there is...
we are recording as National Coming Out Day, and we did not do this on purpose.
We didn't do it on purpose.
But there is a mermaid female... There's one female, other female character.
Lily.
In this film, who, the mermaid and Lily have some moments together.
They have some moments. There's this tension.
They have some tender moments together. There is some tension.
And she does, the mermaid does impregnate Lily, who is not capable of having children. So there's this kind of interesting, and so you then learn that men aren't needed to reproduce for
this is true. Mermaids. This is true, yeah.
Yeah, so we learn that men are just food. And they don't need men to reproduce. They can reproduce in other ways. So, you know, with it being another being that's not human, that is their life cycle, is that they can reproduce in other ways. So that's kind of interesting. So I think that's interesting that they don't need men. I think it's also interesting, considering it's 1905, their dynamic of being, well, A, Lily's the only female on the ship, and then the mermaid is female-esque. And just kind of some of, like, the inherent danger that might be there as being, like, kind of women alone on the boat was kind of interesting as well. We also find out that Lily was a prostitute in her former life.
So, technical distance.
Well, as we mentioned, I think, like, it's practical effects. It's Stan Winston, so it's practical effects. It's
so
not
it's good-looking practical effects, even if they're cheap.
And it's not CGI.
Which doesn't date, like, practical effects.
I think, for me, the cheesiest part is, like, the mermaid sees red. That was a little cheesy.
Okay, yeah, there are some POV shots where you become the mermaid and see what the mermaid sees.
And she sees
the mermaid
red.
Is hungry and
and sees in red. So that came across a little bit cheesy. And since it's set in 1905, you're not expecting to see anything you're not expecting to see telephone.
It's pastness.
The way, as you mentioned, though, the thing that kind of took me out of it a little bit is, like, everybody is so clean looking, even the men who are taking care of the ship.
Yes, who've been out to sea for their entire lives and probably have one pair of clothes.
Yes. They all still looked really put together and really clean. That kind of, like, took me out of it a little bit. Like, these seamen were not look these this good in 1909.
So... will we ever watch it again?
Probably not.
Probably not. Or if we have it so long and we forget.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, there's...
I think we could forget we've seen this movie and watch this movie again.
That's true.
And 15 minutes go and go, wait, did we see this?
I do. There's parts of it...
Did we talk about this on a podcast?
I mean, there are parts I do like about it. I do like... kind of that, like, as the carnies, as the carnival folk, they're luring people in with false promises.
Yeah.
And so that kind of, like, that dichotomy of being a real mermaid versus people who are luring in people and taking advantage of them.
Yeah, it's the freaks meet real freaks.
Right.
Which is almost a theme from last podcast, Peeping Tom.
Yeah.
The voyeurs watch a voyeur.
Right.
The freaks meet a real freak.
And Lily, we find out Lily, who's been playing as a mermaid, was a prostitute who stole money from her clients and was running away. So she obviously was luring in men and taking their money. And so she was a siren herself, a type of siren in her other life. So it's kind of interesting of, like, the difference between the real and the fantasy. And that... in some ways, the mermaid is just honest about what the mermaid does, where they're really about deceiving people, and they kind of do get the karma, right? In some ways, karma comes to find them. I think that's interesting. I think that could have been handled better. And so there's like these little gems that I think are kind of interesting in it. And I do think the actors did try really hard. And I think
everybody sends it.
Everyone sends it. Everyone kind of owns their characters. It is a good, satisfying popcorn movie, but it's not a movie that sticks with you. And you're going to kind of walk away and forget about it over time. And it's not going to be one that you're like, oh man, mermaid. She creature. I haven't seen that in forever. Your thoughts?
Same. But really, we'll forget we've seen this movie and we'll watch it again. That's all I got.
I think that's all we got for this movie. You're probably not going to be able to find it. Maybe on YouTube. It's hard to Google. Not a lot of people have seen it. And you might not want to see it.
Yes, and you can't borrow our copy because then we might not get it back.
All right.
All right, later. Well,
that's all, folks.
Later.
Bye.
Bye.